Hello, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind.
She's ugly, you say, old beauties, and grimy, dirty, and drear. Why, partner, I never could see it, and I've lived here many a year. There's nothing pretty about her, but somehow she's strong and free, and big and rugged, and, well, comrade, she looks pretty good to me.
Well, here we are again. This is show number 21. Can you believe that? I never thought. A year ago, I was convinced I wasn't able to do this at all. But then my wife, Joanna, and Steve Baker, and some other really, really people with much great deeper thinkers than I am said, well, as long as you're stranded in Nevada City because of this heart condition, why don't you start spewing some of that rural ribaldry, raucous rusticana, and fecal badinage that you are given to over the people's airwaves. So, yes, here I am. At the in Nevada City, my home in California, with Steve Baker, who's engineering, from our community station KVMR, our liberal station. What is it old Charlie Kelly in Utah said liberal was? He said, difference between a liberal and a conservative is a liberal will hang you from a lower limb. And then Nevada City continues to be Nevada City. We're preparing now special events that are brought here, like the bike races by our Chamber of Commerce. We're doing the Tour de Snot next week. I'm entered in the Hawking Lungers event. So I'm not going to play the guitar for you today. I went out late last night to get a cigar, and somebody stepped on my fingers. Is there no end to it? How does he do it? Why does he do it? I have a special guest here. This is something that I've never done. This just came up last night. I've played his music. I've talked about him. Ever since I started doing this, I've known him for many years. Mark Ross. Mark Ross from Butte, Montana, breezed into town last night. I had a show all planned on spoken word things, which I will do next week. But I decided, hell, let's get Mark here into the studio and introduce you to him and to his music. He's one of the three or four, maybe out at the outside, five people who are still playing the traditional repertoire. In other words, who really are folk singers because they sing the songs of the folk. Not that he can't pen a pretty good song every now and then. Mark Ross is a kind of name, kind of person who hovers on the edge of consciousness, certainly his own. Well, hello, Mark. I'm glad to see you.
Good morning, Bruce.
And welcome to Nevada City, you know, Butte, Montana to Nevada City, out of the frying pan and into the frying pan. Yeah, it was a hard drive down from there, but you made it in quick time.
Yeah, the Montana Metro Express. Oh. You never believed a Geo Metro could do 85 miles an hour on...
Without being airborne, yeah. Well, you're on your way down to do a thing that I was asked to come down to do, the commemoration of this free speech fight at Liberty Hill in Los Angeles. So that's what brings you through town,
yeah,
right?
75th anniversary.
Oh, so they're going to put up a plaque and you're going to sing the old wobbly songs. I wish I could have been down there for that. Now, Mark started out, I've known Mark for better than 25 years, yes. And...
27, but who's counting?
Oh, thank you, who's counting? So I first met him on the streets of Greenwich Village, and that was in the waning days of the authentic folk music scare, the great folk music revival, as it's called. And that's where Mark started out, you know, born in New York and now from Butte, Montana. One of the few who had the courage to leap across the Hudson River and wend his way westward on the assumption that if it was going to happen, it would happen someplace else besides New York City. What was it like, Mark, in Greenwich Village during the height of the folk music revival?
Well, it was interesting. It was busy. I was 17 years old when I started, and I was working a straight job. I'd moved out of my parents' house and had a room for $10 a week in Hell's Kitchen. And I was living two blocks away from where I worked in the storeroom. And I called in well one day. I said, I feel too good to come to work anymore. And there were these places in Greenwich Village where you could get up on stage and pass the hat.
Basket houses.
Yeah.
I'll describe a basket
house. Well, a little dingy place, usually below the street. The only people who got paid were the dishwasher and the doorman, the guy who pulled in crowds from the street. The only way you got paid was by passing a wicker basket or a hat or some other receptacle. Mm-hmm. And back in those days, I couldn't sing, I couldn't play guitar, and you couldn't hear me in the first row. And if you did, you wished you couldn't. I'm not sure things have changed all that much.
Oh, yes, they really have. You know, practice makes perfect. But now, right around that time, before that, you know, that's how Bob Dylan had started out.
Oh, yeah.
And with Jack Elliott and Van Ronk.
Richie Havens. And when I was working the basket houses, I was working the same nights as Steve Goodman and Emmylou Harris, Jay Unger, Charlie Chin. Who else? Jeez, I can't remember everybody.
Well, Blind Eric Flatbeck.
Yeah.
Eric Franzen, you bet. Well, now, you last night we were schmoozing around up there, and you were drinking Old Overcoat, which, and I had laid off because I've been feeling a little peaked. Nonetheless, I was able to keep up a steady flow of conversation. I was awed. And you mentioned being in the village the night that Woody Guthrie died.
Yeah, October 3rd, 1967, word went around that Woody had passed away, and in every coffee house in town, people were just very quiet. Wasn't much of an audience around that night. I think it was a weeknight. And we sat around, and we just started playing Woody songs and singing other songs that were relevant to the occasion.
Do you remember a song that you were doing at that time?
Well, I learned this one I learned that night from a fellow named Tom Gent. Miss Collins weep, Miss Collins, she moaned to see her son Lewis leave his home. The angels laid him away. The angels laid him away. They laid him 6 feet under the clay. The angels laid him away. Well, Lewis shot once and Bob shot two. He shot poor Collins through and through. The angels laid him away. The angels laid him away. They laid him 6 feet under the clay. The angels laid him away. Now when she heard that Collins was dead, all women went round and they dressed up in red. Oh, the angels laid him away. The angels laid him away. They laid him 6 feet under the clay. The angels laid him away.
Death of Lewis Collins. Let me dog. I've been trying to remember who it was I learned that from.
Tom Paley.
Tom Paley from the old New Lost City Ramblers. Yeah, he played an A. You have an unusual style of finger picking the guitar, and that is, which I'll have to describe to the people. Most of the time when you finger pick, you claw hammer, your thumb goes back and forth between the bass strings, and then you pick the lead on the top two or three strings with your index finger and your social finger. But Mark holds a flat pick between his thumb and index finger and does the bass with that, and then plays the melody with his second and third finger. I've tried to do that, and it's not hard. It's impossible. So it must have taken you a long time to figure that out.
It's all done with mirrors. I saw Steve Steve, what was his name? Wrote Darcy Farrow, Gillette. Steve Gillette,
oh yeah.
I saw Steve Gillette first do that, and it took me about 10 years of constant and insidious practice.
Why did you decide to try to learn to play it that way instead of, you know, the real way?
I like the sound of the pick. Uh-huh. I just don't like the feel of a thumb pick.
Oh, okay.
And plus, this gives me the versatility to go back and forth between thumb picking, to flat picking, and finger picking.
What kind of guitar? This looks like a Martin guitar, an old Martin.
Yeah, it's a sort of a reproduction. It's made in the Martin style. It's a Schmuckler.
You're kidding me.
No. It's Schmuckler being German for jeweler, but the name of the guy who built it for me, Ivan Schmuckler, he was making some guitars I'd seen in a size and a shape that was not commercially available at the time. Rory Block had one, Roy Bookbinder, Ken Perlman, and we went out to lunch one day, and we talked about what I would want in a guitar, the mm-hmm. woods, the size, the shape, and he said if I ordered one, he would put IWW and Mother of Pearl on the headstock at no extra charge, and I said, I have to have it.
Yeah, that's right. Ivan Schmuckler is not a setup for a joke. I'm very happy to hear it. Well, give us a sample of playing, that's playing that style, just a... What do you want to do?
Oh, let's do it. This is a tune I wrote for Merle, after meeting Merle Travis.
Where was that?
Philadelphia Folk Festival in 1976.
Merle Travis, for those you don't know, is one of the people who taught this drop thumb, this idea of playing the guitar so it sounds like two guitars, to enormous numbers of people. And what is the name of it?
He drove up to the festival site and is... monstrously big red Cadillac, and the license plate read 16 tons. And we sat down, and I got to play with him, and he was sitting there, and I tried to get him to sing some of his own songs. He said no, he just wanted to just play behind me. We were sitting backstage, and in gratitude, I wrote this piece for him called The Red Cadillac Rag.
Cadillac Rag, you know, it does sound like Merle Travis, doesn't he? He plays old broken glass chords, the ones I learned to try to learn from Mickey Baker guitar books when I had to go to a chiropractor to get my fingers unbraided. Well, now, you know, it was my impression, I hit New York late when I run out of Utah, you know, in my old Hitler's Revenge, my VW bus, $75, and I showed up. That's when I met you at the...
It was Gaslight Cafe backstage.
Yeah, down under, that was when I was opening for Brownie McGee and Sinclair.
Actually, I think it was the night you came in to do a guest set to show them what you could do.
Oh, yeah. And I was like a fish out of water, you know, I really didn't have any idea. I was an unemployed organizer, I had no idea what a folk singer was, but... As I got to know people there, it seemed to me that the village was a magnet during the folk music revival for people who honestly believed that they were going to make it commercially, that they had to do it in New York. And so they would sit around in the Kettle of Fish bar and whine about there not being any work and wouldn't go 100 miles up the river to New Paul's to play a college gig for a couple hundred dollars, you know. You seem to have been the one... who leapt, as I said, leapt over the Hudson River and went west. How was that? Was that a...
Well, I couldn't get all that much work in New York, you know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't quite a fish out of water. Maybe I was just a dinosaur, you know, in the wrong age. It was just that... the reason I left was 1976. There were three suicides that year in the folk music community. Two of the people I knew. Let's see. Phil Oakes, mm-hmm. Rosalie's... son, David,
yes.
and Pat Chamberlain.
Pat Chamberlain, I remember
Yeah,
that.
Those three all killed themselves in the space of 9 months. And Kenny Kosek, the great fiddler, he would say to me, you know, Mark, you go out of town, you come back after a couple of months, you're picking and singing better than anybody's ever heard you for the first 2 weeks. And it was sort of just reaching a plateau. Mm-hmm. And I sort of decided it was time to leave those environs, the land of my nativity, and seek wider horizons, you know. And why not go try playing folk music to the folk?
So you headed, you went out to the Midwest.
Well, I went to Wichita. You always confuse the two, don't you? Went to Wichita. I was there for about a year and a half, and then I was booming in and out of Chicago and Minneapolis for a couple of months, and mm-hmm. then I was on my way to Florida from Chicago.
Hitchhiking. I tell you, Mark doesn't drive, you know, and if you knew Mark, you'd know why, and be really happy he wasn't out on the highway behind the wheel of 2,000 pounds of iron.
Well, you know, and I was on my way to Chicago from Florida from Chicago by way of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Montana to visit some wobblies I knew out there. I'd never seen the Northwest. My mother was raised in Seattle. And I got to Missoula, and my second night there, somebody took me to Luke's Bar, the Missoula School for the Abnormally Cheerful and Easily Amused, mm-hmm. for the talent contest. And I won, and I had no pressing engagements elsewhere.
So you got stuck you stayed in Missoula. You also, I mentioned earlier, you've been known to pen a pretty good song, and can you remember one of those that you made up while you were out there?
No, I can remember one I wrote in New York, yeah, let's see.
Really?
I wrote this in New York, yeah, just before I left. New York is a funny town, full of people and stories. Long concrete canyons, pretty girls by the score. Bars that are open till 4 in the morning. There ain't nothing left here for me anymore. I'd rather be in Cheyenne, where the northern wind blows, sweeps down off the prairie and cuts to the bone. Oh, the bright lights be damned. You stay here if you want to. But as for me, I'd rather be in Cheyenne. Well, the woman I'm seeing, she says she's heard of Wyoming. She ain't never been there. She don't care to go. She says she'll be crying when I leave in the morning. And though I hate to see her tears, I still gotta go. I'd rather be in Cheyenne, where the northern wind blows, sweeps down off the prairie and cuts to the bone. Oh, the bright lights be damned. You stay here if you want to. But as for me, I'd rather be in Cheyenne. Well, the bright lights, they hurt my eyes, and my feet's stuck on the pavement. The bright lights and the wise-ass conversation all leaves me bored. Well, I'm going back west again, where there's a soft rain falling, and I don't even have to hear it if I shut the door. Well, my glass has been empty for a mighty long time. The jukebox is playing the same goddamn song, and that blonde at the bar, she keeps looking better and better. And I think that I've been back here in this town too long. I'd rather be in Cheyenne, where the northern wind blows, sweeps down off the prairie and cuts to the bone. Oh, the bright lights be damned. You stay here if you want to. But as for me, I'd rather be in Cheyenne.
Well, that's a dandy. And of course, by that time, you'd hardly ever been west of the Hudson River.
No, I'd been west.
And what, East Orange?
No, I'd been to California.
That's right. You did come out here during the revival.
Yeah, in 1970, I came out. Well, I came out here the first time in 67, hitchhiked all the way across country. Mm-hmm. Came out again in 70 and 71. And by the time I wrote that, I'd made a couple of trips to play for the Fool Killers down around Kansas City.
Oh, yeah, for Bold Bob Sukill.
Yeah.
Now, of course, part of traveling, of your traveling, moving back and forth across the country, is acquiring, picking up the stories, picking up the tales, and then turning them, if you couldn't find songs, turning them into songs. I remember playing down in Amarillo and going down to the stockyards and seeing that big iron statue of Wild Bill Pickett. Tell us about that.
Well, I'd run across a book when I moved to California that had this poem in it. It was the first verse of his epitaph that was written by his boss, Zach Miller. 4 a.m, to my wife's dismay, I turned on the lights, jumped up, grabbed a guitar and a pen and pencil and a pad, and started writing it down. Bill Pickett was the guy who invented bulldogging. The reason it was called bulldogging, because of the way he did it. He would come out of the chute on his horse, spradly, doing 45, 50 miles an hour, chasing after a damn fool steer, take a flying leap off the horse, grab the steers by the horns, dig his heels into the arena sand, twist the horns down, getting the head up in the air as he pulled the steer to a stop. He would grab the steer's nose or upper lip with his teeth and let go of the horns with his hands, hanging on like a bulldog. He would throw that steer into the dust. It's a very tasty job.
He was one of the great black cowboys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not as hard, the job isn't as hard as it sounds. You know, I'm told there is a nerve that runs through a steer's upper lip that, when pressure is applied, renders him virtually paralyzed.
I can't wait to watch you try it,
Mark. I haven't had the guts to try it myself. Well, old Bill Pickett's gone away over the Great Divide to the place where all the preachers say both saint and sinner abide. If the check is brand like I think they will, it's a running hoss they'll give to Bill and some good wild steers till he gets his fill. Great big crowd to watch him ride. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Bill Pickett was a mighty black man, and he rode for the 101, away down yonder on the Cherokee lands, around when the West was won. Well, he'd jump a steer from a running hoss, and he'd throw him down with a mighty toss, and he'd work for many, but he had no boss. He was the last of the great cowhands. Well, old Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song. It was way down south Mexico, he took a great big dare to try and hold a fighting bull to see how he would fare. He grabbed old Toro by the horns, he grabbed the bull's nose in his jaws. The crowd never seen such a thing before. For an hour and a half they cheered. That last verse was a lie, I have to admit. You know, the 101 Ranch and Wild West Show was down in Mexico City putting on an exhibition, and one night in a cantina, the cowboys there got into an argument with the picadors and the toreadors and the matadors and the swinging doors and what have you as to which was the finer and nobler sport, bullfighting or rodeoing. And the only way they could think of to settle the argument was a bet that Bill Pickett could stay in the ring for 15 minutes and hold on for 5 to a fighting bull. Not with his teeth, just with his hands. Well, the bets were laid, the date was set, the arena was rented, the place was crowded, they turned loose El Toro, and Pickett, after his horse got gored, managed to get close enough to grab onto those horns, and for the next 6 minutes, that bull proceeded to use Pickett as a whipcracker. At the end of 6 minutes, the cowboys realized nobody was about to call time, and even if somebody was, the bull wasn't about to listen, so they had to ride in and rope the bull and hold the bull down so Pickett could get out of there with his butt in one piece. Needless to say, the spectators, were incensed at this insult to that noble fighting animal, and they started throwing things like bottles and bricks and bullets and knives, and they had to call out the Federales to save them and get them to the train in one piece. And if I had tried to write the song as it really happened, it would have added another 11 verses, and the damn thing's long enough as it is. Well, old Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song. With the great Will Rogers and Wild Tom Mixie rode for the rodeo, for all that paid their 50 cents, the cave a great big show. For all that paid to come and silly Bill wrestled steers with his teeth. Now we've never seen such a mighty feat, cause he left us long ago. Well, old Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song. It was way down on the Miller Ranch in the year of 32. Bill Pickett roped a sorrel stud to see what he could do. That sorrel stomped and jumped and bucked and tromped Bill's body in the dust. At 73, Bill was out of luck. It took 11 days to die. There's nothing he could do. Oh, Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song. Oh, Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song. So they laid him down in a 6x3 beneath the land he knew, and they left across for the world to see. Said of his kind we've seen few. That right for Bill that drank some wine, and old Zach Miller, he wrote these lines, and he left them there to me to find, to put to music and sing to you. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song. Old Bill Pickett's long time gone, left me here to sing this song.
Well, here we are back again, talking to my old friend Mark Ross from Butte, Montana, who's breezing through town, as he's breezed through so many towns. Stopped to spend a day here with us, and I thought I'd give you an opportunity to listen to what Mark does. Mark is rapidly approaching his 50th year at a blinding rate of speed, and has absorbed an enormous amount of music and created himself no small part of it. What I value about Mark is that he is a receptacle of that tradition, which is going to perish unless our current crop of singer-songwriters get hip to it and start using it, tune models, verse models, and so on. Otherwise, it'll certainly perish. As I've said, Mark, I've met three or four people who are making a living doing any part of the traditional repertoire. So now that thing, that instrument you have in your hand now is a five-string banjo.
An instrument of torture, definitely.
There are banjo players who listen to this show, and they've let me know in no uncertain terms they don't want to hear any banjo player jokes. So
a banjo player makes them.
we'll dispense with those, of course. Uncle Dave Macon. You learned some. Now he's one of the real traditional original Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, he was the first star, and he is a You know, he was a great musician, great musician. He didn't start performing until he was as a professional performer until he was in his 50s.
I'll be darned.
And I think it was he had an obnoxious neighbor who was throwing a party, I think I read. And the fellow said, "How much would you charge to play at the party?" And Uncle Dave, to shut him up, said $5. And the guy said, "Okay."
Well, that's
and that was his start in the business.
That'll change your life, won't it? Well, give us one of Uncle Dave Bacon's tunes.
I'm going downtown, gonna buy me a sack of flour, gonna cook it every hour, keep my skillet good and greasy all the time, time, time. Keep a skillet good and greasy all the time. Wah, 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 wah. Well, there's chicken on my back, hound dog on my track. I'm heading for my little shanty home, home, home. I'm heading for my little shanty home. When I get up to the door, gonna pitch him under the floor. Keep my skillet good and greasy all the time, time, time. Keep my skillet good and greasy all the time. If you say so, I ain't gonna work no more. Gonna lay around this shanty all the time, time, time. Gonna lay around this shanty all the time. I'm going on that hill, gonna buy me a jug of brandy. Gonna give it all to Mandy. Keep him good and drunk and boozy all the time, time, time. Keep her good and drunk and boozy all the time.
Whoa! Now that wasn't a regular Scruggs roll on the banjo.
That was the minstrel roll.
Oh, minstrel. Okay, where did you learn that?
Off of Dobro Dick. Dick Diloff. Yeah, he showed it to me.
The hobo up there in what? Bozeman?
Livingston.
Livingston. Yeah. Yeah. Well, give us another one of those. What is it? Down the Old Plank Road or Roll On, Buddy?
How about Roll On, Buddy?
Well, Sally wants a $9 shawl. Sally wants a $9 shawl. I come running down the hill with a $50 bill. She's crying, "Baby, where you been so long?" I said, "Roll on, buddy, roll on. Roll on, buddy, roll on. You couldn't roll so slow if you knew what I know. It's roll on, buddy, roll on." "Well, babe, where'd you stay last night?" "Well, babe, where'd you stay last night?" "I've been in the pen with some rough and rowdy men, and it's roll on, buddy, roll on. Roll on, buddy, roll on. Roll on, buddy, roll on. You could roll so slow if you knew what I know. It's roll on, buddy, roll on." "Well, I never liked no railroad man. I never liked no railroad man. A railroad man, he'd kill you if he can. He'd drink down your blood like wine. Roll on, buddy, roll on. Roll on, buddy, roll on. You couldn't roll so slow if you knew what I know. It's roll on, buddy, roll on." "Well, Sally, let your hair hang down. Sally, let your hair hang down. Let let your hair hang down, let it flow round and round. It's I let your hair hang down. I said, roll on, buddy, roll on. Roll on, buddy, roll on. You couldn't roll so slow if you knew what I know. It's roll on, buddy, roll on.
Never marry a railroad man. He'll kill you if he can.
He'll drink down your blood like wine.
Good heavens now. See, I take it all back, you know. Don't learn folk music. You see, one wonders what kind of angst brings verses like that about, for heaven's sake. Well, now look, you're on your way down to this Liberty Hill free speech affair, and one of the reasons that you were invited to do that free speech fight was one that was waged by the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, the Wobblies. You've been a member of the IWW for how long?
27 years.
Yeah, tell the folks, you know, the first folks have heard me rant about the Industrial Workers of the World, which I've been a member of for, more years than that. Tell us, give them your idea of what the IWW is.
Well, it believes that there should be abundance for workers and nothing for parasites, that since labor produces all wealth should go to labor, and that the working class should organize as a class and take over the means of production.
I think that about covers it.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't have said it better myself, Mark.
Well, where do you think I learned it from?
Look, give us one of the Wobbly songs. The unpopular Wobbly?
How about Mysteries of a Hobo's Life?
Oh, I like that one a lot.
Well, I took a job on an extra gang away up on the mountain, and I paid my fee, and the shark shipped me, and the ties I soon was counting. And the boss, he set me driving spikes, and the sweat was enough to blind me. Well, it didn't seem to like my pay, so I left that job behind me. And I grabbed a hold of an old freight train, around the country traveled, and the mysteries of a hobo's life to me were soon unraveled. And I traveled east and traveled west, and the shacks could never find me. Next morning I was miles away from the job I left behind me. And I ran across a bunch of stiffs who were known as industrial workers, and they taught me how to be a man and how to fight the shirkers. So I chipped right in and joined the bunch. Now in the ranks you'll find me. Hurrah for the cause, to hell with the boss and the job I left behind me.
That's one of the rare Wobbly songs. Nobody's saying. I think you're the only one who sings that. But
maybe Bob Bovey.
Good. You'll be singing that down there in Los Angeles. Well, you'll have an ample opportunity. They're going to put up a plaque for that free speech fight and do the whole nine yards down there. Trains, tramps. I remember when I was living in Spokane, Washington, you'd come into town on the freight trains. In fact, you're the only person I know who's been in a train wreck and walked away from it.
Yep.
Tell me about that.
Well, I was on my way over to visit you, and I grabbed a freight out of Missoula. I started out on a portable parking lot, a car carrier, and it was a bit drafty. And when we went into the hole over at Alberton, Montana, I looked around, and I saw there was an empty boxcar a couple of cars up. And I went and got in that empty boxcar, and it's a damn good thing I did, because a couple of hours later, Rathdrum, Idaho, about 30 miles away from Spokane. That train was doing 60 miles an hour on the flat there, trying to make it in, before the hog law took over, where the crew would have to quit because they'd been on service too long. And they were doing about 60, and I think 27 cars fell off the tracks. And I was in number 23. And you could see the grooves in the steel floor where I was digging my fingers in to hang on. And we came to a stop. It was about a 75-degree angle, the floor was. And I grabbed my guitar and I grabbed my pack. And for some reason, I started to walk out the uphill door. I don't know why. I was still a bit discombobulated. And I lost my footing and slid out the door. Fortunately, the door on the other side was open because I landed on my feet, still holding my guitar and my pack. And I started out towards the back of the train after figuring out which way that was, wanting to see if the crew was hurt, and I saw a light coming up the other side. And I said, is anybody there? And I heard this voice say, boy, you almost got yourself killed. I said, now tell me something I don't know.
Well, you got injured in that. I told you, and they billed you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had a sprained wrist. The search and rescue crew showed up, put a collar on me, and they said, you know, what's wrong with you? I said, I got a sprained wrist. I could use an ACE bandage. And they said, okay, we'll help you down to the ambulance. I said, let me take my guitar. They said, no, somebody will bring it down for you. And this woman was trying to help me down the embankment to the vehicle, and she kept falling on her butt, and I kept having to pick her back up again. And I got, you know, they took me to the Coeur d'Alene Hospital, and 4 hours, 12 x-rays, and 15 forms later, they turned me loose, and I had to hitchhike the last 30 miles from Coeur d'Alene.
And they tried to bill you for
that. $300 in the hospital bills. They kept sending me these notices. Finally, I got one that said, either you don't understand this bill or we don't understand this bill. Please communicate with us. And as I tossed it once more into the circular file, I said into the cosmos, you don't understand. I have no intention of paying this bill. And, you know, I never got another one.
Well, they should have sent it to the railroad. I mean, well, they wrecked the damn train, didn't they? Sing us up one of those. Give us one of those trance songs.
I was born in Dixie in a boomer shack, just a half a mile from a railroad track. The humming of the drivers was my lullaby. Freight train whistle taught me how to cry. I got the freight train blues. Got them in the middle of my rambling shoes. Got the freight train blues. Got him in the middle of my rambling shoes. No, I'm old enough to quit my running round. I've tried 100 times to settle down. Every time I find a place I'd like to stay, freight train whistle toss sends me on my way. Got the freight train blues. Got me in the middle of my rambling shoes. I got the freight train blues. Got me in the middle of my rambling shoes. My mama was a daughter of an engineer. There's been a derailment on the train of thought. My mama, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. She was the only daughter of an engineer. And my sweetie was a brakeman, and it ain't no joke. She knew more ways to keep a good man broke. I got the freight train blues. Got him in the middle of my rambling shoes. Got the freight train blues. Got him in the middle of my rambling shoes. I got the freight train blues. Got him in the middle of my rambling shoes. I got the freight train blues. Got him in the middle of my rambling shoes.
Well, you noticed that when Mark plays, just like me, he makes mistakes. But there are people in every audience who do nothing but look for mistakes, and he's trying to please everybody, of course. When people think of folk music, they think freight trains. These days, they think about Woody Guthrie. Now, if I'm not mistaken, hanging out with you from town to town, you know some Woody Guthrie songs that most people don't know, the standard Woody Guthrie repertoire. You know some songs. He may have thousands of songs.
Yeah.
But you know some of those. Can you recall one of those?
Oh, yeah. I remember learning this. I think it was from Karen Dalton back and sitting around the Cafe Fiend John about 1968 or 69.
On McDougal Street.
Yeah. It was in a sad saloon by the rising of the moon. I took a stool to drink my cares away. It was in your flickering light that I watched you dancing past me. Well, I watched you in your old crack-looking glass. You did shake it, you did shimmy, and you snapped your fingers loud. Brush your hair against me as you dance your sawdust floor. You did wiggle, you did jiggle to the clicking of your tongue. I watch you in that old crack-looking glass. I'm a stranger here in town, not a soul knows me about. I did ache to feel your hot hand touching mine. But when you touched my neck, saying, partner, buy the drinks, well, your hand felt colder than the night outside. You did shake it, you did shimmy, and you snapped your fingers loud. Brush your hair against me as you dance your sawdust floor. You did wiggle, you did jiggle to the clicking of your tongue. I watched you in that old crack-looking glass. Then a dream came to my mind of a gal I left behind waiting for me most 3,000 miles away. And I threw my drinking glass through your old crack-looking glass, and I did not stop till she was by my side. You did shake it, you did shimmy, and you snapped your fingers loud. Brushed your hair against me as you danced your sawdust floor. You did wiggle, you did jiggle to the clicking of your tongue. I watch you in that old crack-looking glass. You know I will not stop to count, nor to add up the amount of all the guys who've hitchhiked through your glass. I wish I had a dollar bill for every paycheck that you've killed in that room back of your old crack-looking glass. You did shake it, you did shimmy, and you snapped your fingers loud. Brush your hair against me as you dance your sawdust floor. You did wiggle, you did jiggle to the clicking of your tongue. I watch you in that old crack-looking glass.
Felder knew how to paint a picture, you know, and Woody, thinking one of the things that transformed the writing of songs was that he didn't pay attention to true rhymes. He used what were called assonant rhymes. If the vowels were roughly equivalent, he would just sing right through so that the words made sense, rather than having to invert in order to wind up with true rhymes. I know that sounds like technical blather, but to us folks that craft songs out of this, our native tongue...
Well, I'd rather that than using rhymes of convenience myself.
Oh, rhymes, that we know too many songs like that. We're going to be rolling to the end of this here. I sure appreciate you being here. Now, Butte, Montana. You got me to Butte, and of course I fell in love with the town, and I've been up there visiting any amount of time. I've told people about staying at the Tui Hotel that Bessie Mulhern used to run until she passed away. How old was Bessie?
94 at the end.
Yeah, and that wonderful lilting Irish accent. Carl Rowan, He passed on, ran Gamer's Cafe. His father's signature is on the charter, original charter of the Industrial Workers of the World. I loved Butte. Now, do you tell me about your Butte?
Well,
you wear Butte like a new set of clothes.
Well, it's your fault I'm there.
How do you get blamed?
You assured me that I'd be safe, that there wasn't any work there. You know, and you came to me and said that you thought I'd run out my string in Missoula.
Well, you had. There was that guy, Peter Bowen, who was writing The Dimensions of a Grave. What is it on your door?
3-7-77.
The Dimensions of a Grave. That's the old vigilante warning on your door. And Tom Hayden gave you that pistol. If anybody in the world shouldn't have a pistol, it's you. Goddamn it. Me and J.B. Freeman decided you had to leave town and that the closest other town was Butte.
Well, I'm in Butte, and it does suit me. It's a town that doesn't confuse having character with being one. You know.
I like that. Okay.
You know, the difference between Missoula and Butte. You know, Missoula has dinks. You know, dinks, double income, no kids. Well, Butte has skinnies, seven kids, no income. It's, it. I mean, you know, it's the only island on Earth surrounded completely by land. And since all the other towns in Montana seem to be getting, I hate to use the phrase, but yupped out. You know, people are moving in, you know, who've got lots of money. A lot of them, I'm ashamed to say, are from California. And the realtors are taking ungodly advantage of this fact and making all the towns extremely expensive to live in. So the only place they can go is Butte. It's not going to happen in Butte because we're the biggest toxic waste dump in the whole country. We've got the remnants of an open pit mine 5 blocks from the main uptown business section filled with, I think, 800 feet, 290 million gallons of highly toxic waste, somewhere around the pH of battery acid.
And they always said that the stars above Butte shone better than any place on Earth.
They flickered brighter than any place on Earth. That's the radon gas.
Radon, yeah. Well, that's Butte. Well, look, sing us a song about that, and then we'll go out with that, okay? This is a town-warming song. I made up the words when Mark moved to Butte, and then he made the tune for it.
As I walk these concrete canyons down in Frisco by the sea, there's lots of room for plutocrats. There's no place left for me. All the flops have gone for condos and the skids are down the chute. But now looking don't cost nothing, boys, so look for me in Butte. Look for me in Butte, Montana, high up on the hill, where it seems like you can live for weeks on a $20 bill. Bessie, put the kettle on. I've been out on a toot. When there's nothing left worth looking for, look for me in Butte. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, all the jungle fires have died. Piggyback containers, there's no place a bull can ride. All the bulls are getting surly, seems they're more inclined to shoot. You know, I'm tired of being civilized, so look for me in Butte. Look for me in Butte, where my ragged soul can mend. In a world that's full of strangers, you can always find a friend. Bessie, put the kettle on, I've been out on a toot. When there's no place left worth looking for, look for me in Butte. So when my days are ended and my final race is run, I'll think about the good times and all the things I've done. When I'm packing my last bindle down the Indian Valley route, if I can't get into heaven, boys, look for me in Butte. Look for me in Butte if you're looking anywhere. Whatever I've been missing, it's sure bound to happen there. Bessie, put the kettle on, I've been out on a toot. When there's nothing left worth looking for, look for me in Butte. Look for me in Butte where the mountains kiss the stars. I'll be drinking with the miners at the old Helsinki bar. Bessie, put your bonnet on, let's go out on a toot. When there's nothing left worth looking for, look for me in Butte. Well, Bessie, put your bonnet on, let's go out on a toot. When there's no place left worth looking for, look for me in Butte.
Well, thank you so much, Mark Ross, for being with us here today, and thank you, folks, for tuning in. We, of course, are abundantly grateful to the Heyshan World Fund of the Tides Foundation for making Mark Ross possible, and we'll see you again next week.
ugly and bleak, well, baby, but my eyes have learned to find the beauty of truth, not substance. That beauty that lies behind. Her faults and her sins are many to injure her fair repute, but her heart and her soul are cleanly, and she's beautiful, dear old Butte.